B-Pod Studios.
Drive home with Felger and Matt this afternoon at 2. Right now, this is how Boston sports fans start the day. Toucher and Rich on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Boston with the ball up by 12, 10:48 to go. Tatum behind the back, bounce pass, Jaylen Brown sees an opening. Attacks the paint, gets to the cup, scoring the foul.
Embiid lazy reach in here. Instead of trying to block this shot, he just reaches. You know what? He's ready to go home.
Joel Embiid body language, I was just about to say.
Can I go home, please?
1, 2, 3, Cancun.
.5 of Sports Hub. It is Toucher and Rich. We got Hardy. We got Joe Murray in studio. And the bubble basketball has been phenomenal. I mean, it's the quality of the games have been great. And, you know, got to see the Celtics kind of beat up a team that just doesn't really care anymore. But besides that, I mean, yesterday, there was a game yesterday that's about as good of a basketball game that I've watched. And that was, you know, the Clippers. People were talking about, you know, is their heart into it right now? And they're going up against a Mavericks team that's just got a dude who is destined to be a superstar in this league, and Luka Doncic. And he had already scored, what, 40 points or something at the, and he's 21 years old. The guy has been amazing. And he's awkward when he does it, too. Like, his shots aren't really, like, when he gets in the paint, it's not really pretty. But he's developed a three-point shot that is just absolutely absurd. But yesterday, overtime, down by one, Luka Doncic does this, and I just love this play.
Back to Doncic. Doncic pulls up, three-pointer. Bang! Bang! It's good! Doncic wins the game at the buzzer!
I mean, that series has been unbelievable, and I still think that the Clippers are going to win that when they stop just messing around and Paul George actually plays like a basketball player. He's been absolutely missing. But then you've got, of course, what else is going on with Los Angeles, the Lakers, and, you know, they've got Dame Lillard, and they've got their hands full because Dame Lillard is obviously also on a completely different level of play. And but somebody this weekend kind of pointed out something that we have been discussing about LeBron James for a while. I remember a few years ago was the first time we had noticed it. And maybe it was even back when he had just gone to Miami. But whenever the postseason starts, LeBron's way of showing the world that he is tuning everybody out is that when the cameras are around in the locker rooms, LeBron likes to have a book in front of him. He's engrossed in this book. He's reading this book, and he's all in on it. Now, whether he's lying on the floor or he's sitting at his locker, he's tuned everyone out on this.
He's a now, booker. Yes, he turns into a postseason bookworm LeBron.
That's right, bookworm LeBron. Now, whether it's some of the books he's been holding in his hands are The Godfather was one.
Yeah.
He was reading a nice a teenage drama novel, Catching Fire, from the Hunger Games series. He has been reading many different books, and somebody this weekend, and we've been saying this, it seems every time he's reading, it's the first page of the book. And this is like, he's read The Godfather a couple times. Like, we've seen, like, in different years of playoffs, he's had The Godfather, the same book. But it doesn't seem like he ever gets past the first page. And I just retweeted a picture of someone who compiled all the times LeBron James was in the locker room reading. And almost each time, it's the first page of the book. Now, am I saying that he's not actually reading these books? Maybe not. But when asked a couple of years ago what he thought, because he was bragging about how he's read The Godfather several times, and he's also had seen, matter of fact, he said in one weekend he watched The Godfather 20 times, which, by the way, that's a very long movie. To watch it 20 times doesn't seem like that would actually be real, but even if he watched it 2 or 3 times, you would think you would be able to answer a question like this. This is LeBron James after bragging about how he's read it a ton of times and he's seen the movie over 20 times. This is LeBron James telling you about The Godfather.
It is a question not related to the game, but since it has been a lot of publicity yesterday and today about Godfather Part 2, which is the scene or the moment or the phrase or the quote you like more from the movie?
Oh, from The Godfather. It's too many different phrases and too many different lines in that movie to just categorize one.
Categorize? But which is the one which inspirates you, represents you more?
I mean, each movie is 9 hours long. I mean, what do you want me to do?
Answer the question.
I mean, so many. I don't know. I'll let you pick one, and I'll roll with it. It's a great trilogy.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
Yeah. How about,
revenge is a dish
best served. Leave the gun, take the cannoli.
Take the cannoli. I mean, there's like, I don't think there are many more quotable movies than The Godfather. So you're telling me if you've seen the movie 20 times and you've read the book however many times that you said it, you can't tell me one thing about The Godfather? You, sir, have not read that book. That's the one book I'm confident that he did not read. Maybe the other ones he did, and maybe I'm just drawing to conclusions that he's always reading the first page of the book. But I'm pretty certain that if somebody asked you, just say something from The Godfather, a movie you've seen 20 times and read 3 times, you'd be able to at least spit out. Take the gun, leave the cannoli. Revenge is a dish best served cold. There's a million different ones.
Yeah.
You broke my heart. I mean, that's from Godfather 2, rather. But still, there's got to be at least one line you'd be able to recite from there if you indeed did what you said and you read those books and saw those movies.
Have you read The Godfather? Have you read it?
No.
Okay.
No.
So I read it a couple of times because I think like my parents had it or something. I read it. It's very sexual. There is a lot of sex in that book. And if you like the movie, it's a good read. It's not like great literature or anything, but it goes into like, a much deeper story about a couple of the characters, about Sonny's mistress. She's got a whole backstory.
Like Apollonia? Anything about her?
Apollonia.
That was his first wife, right?
No. Not Michael's mistress. Sonny's mistress.
Oh, okay.
So the woman that Sonny is with when they do the whole thing to kill him on the causeway and all that stuff. But there's this whole backstory with what's the singer's name? Is it Johnny Fontaine?
Oh yeah, yeah. Which is a great storyline in the movie. It's great.
But it goes like deeper into that. I mean, it's like. And again, it's not great, but if you like that story, the book,
sure.
Like there's no way if you like to read and if you like The Godfather, reading that book, you would come away. There's like all this stuff you could talk about. I haven't read it in 30 years and I could tell you like three or four things from that book that like stood out to me and more great lines in it and all that stuff. I don't know what LeBron's thinking is here. Is anyone going to fall for this? Is anyone going to think that he's a great intellect all of a sudden?
The other thing is
LeBron, because he's reading, The Hunger Games. And the books he just... Listen, he already knocked out the Twilight series. How to Eat Fried Worms was just... that was a real page-turner.
Yeah.
But he just went straight for The Godfather. And maybe it was just like, you think The Godfather, people are going to be intimidated. That's one of those... that's like whenever you watch Cribs, all the guys have the poster of, Scarface in the back and, The Godfather. Godfather, and maybe he thought that would intimidate people that he was reading it. And by the way, someone just said LeBron's book reports are that kid in school who has read the first page on Wikipedia. Well, it was the best of times and it was the worst of times.
Yeah, exactly.
I like this book. Thank you.
Yeah.
But yesterday he was sitting down and once again, he brought with him to his press conference a book. And it was the autobiography of Malcolm X. So he's holding the book right here. And I just want you to listen to the beginning of this and tell me if you think that he read this book.
So you're holding the autobiography of Malcolm X along with Alex Haley. I don't know how far you are into the book, but what's your biggest takeaway so far?
I kind of just started a couple of days ago. But I've read and a lot of notes over the years. It's my first time actually reading this from start to finish. But just a very... very smart man, very, very, very smart man, and basically his words in the 60s,
that's a guy who didn't read the book. It was a very smart man.
His words, the words that he spoke and said with his mouth to form sounds, just very, very wordy, a lot of 60s. 60s words, man. Thank you.
Yep. And that's how it ended. Thank you very much.
Now, that book I haven't read, But I could fake it because I saw the Spike Lee movie a few times. I could tell you a few things about Malcolm X.
Oh, sure.
I mean, just
of
like
course.
You're put on the spot. It's like, yeah, from, you know, really humble, you know, rough beginnings to, you know, finding a spirituality that not everybody agrees with. But he certainly turned his life around and a controversial figure, but one that continues to blah, blah, blah. Look, I just did it. I haven't read that book.
You're an amazing BSer. I love this.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, yeah, you can't do it. You didn't even see the Spike Lee movie?
You see, there's an elephant and a piggy. Butterfly in the sky. And the elephant and the piggy, they go on an adventure. And sometimes they let the pigeon drive the bus. Sometimes they don't.
Right, right.
But in the end,
the pigeon eats
Frog
the
and
hot
Toad
dog.
Frog and Toad were friends. I mean, listen, one was all real moody, and the other one was kind of bitchy to the Toad. But listen, in the end, you know, Frog and Toad all summer. They're friends all summer. Not just in the fall, but summer as well. It's in a book, a reading rainbow. That's why Beverly Cleary, Ramona Quimby, when she was 8, had a really tough year.
That's right. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I am done. It is astounding. And somebody compiled all the pictures. I just tweeted it out of him reading. And he's always on page 1. Like, at least pretend you're in the middle of the book. Like, just pretend you're, like, in the middle of it. Just so, you know, switch it up a little. How come none of his friends are going, hey, dude, man, you know, how's that middle of the book? Look at all these pictures here. You might want to kind of do a bit of a sell job here. I want every time, if you're a member of the press, I want every time LeBron reads a book, somebody to ask him about the book, because these clips, I can't get enough of them. I can't get enough of him trying to describe like what happened to The Godfather without knowing what happened to The Godfather.
This well, is just a question not related to the game, but since it has been a lot of publicity yesterday yep. and today about Godfather Part 2, which is the scene or the moment or the phrase or the quote you like more from the movie?
Oh, from The Godfather. It's too many different phrases and too many different lines in that movie to just categorize one.
But which is the one which inspirates you?
You're laughing at him.
I mean, each movie is 9 hours long. I mean, what do you want me to do?
Three.
I mean, there's so many. I don't know. I'll let you pick one and I'll roll with it. It's a great trilogy.
At the very least, Rich, he needs to. LeBron's a strong guy, right?
Yes.
You can tell, especially on the one where he's laying on the floor, it is taking all of his muscle strength to hold that book open because it's never been opened. You need to open it up and like stick it under your mattress so you crease the binding. You
right can tell. The crack.
Yeah. You know, you can see his forearms are stressing to keep that book held open because it's never been opened until that photo op. Just open the, you know, work the binding a little bit, you know, crease it a little bit. Dog ear some of the pages. I mean, these are things you should have learned in the seventh grade to make it look like you're reading a book. Come on.
God bless LeBron James. All right, we'll be right back.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Tub. Toucher.
Our only concern is your condition.
Rich.
This guy is a piece of work, huh?
Toucher and Rich. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Centering pass picked off by McAvoy. 2-on-1 if they counter. The Lightning are back.
Oshnak had nothing left in the tank trying to get up there on that.
Marchand to the near point. Carlo brings it. They score! Brandon Carlo with a drive. Charlie Coyle got a deflection. And the Bruins with a 1-0 lead late in the first period.
Sports Hub, it's Toucher and Rich. We got Hardy, Joe Murray in studio. That, by the way, right there is Judd Surratt, Bob Beers on our 98.5 Sports Hub broadcast. But if you watched it on TV last night, you got to hear the legend, Doc Emrick, one of the greatest to do it. You know, he is doing that from his home. Did you see the setup that they brought over to his place? He's got this, you know, couple TV thing, but he's not even going to a studio. Last I saw, he's doing it from his house, and still killing it. And he's not like he's not spring chicken either. He's like fairly. How old is Doc Emmerich?
74.
Is he 74? All right.
I looked it up last night. I'm like, why is Doc Emmerich at home? All right. Age may have something to do with it, number one. And I don't know if he's in any kind of at-risk situation, but you'd never know from the way he called the game. He was, I mean, he's always good.
Yeah.
I don't know anybody who's got an issue with how he calls the game, but especially in that environment. But, yeah, 74 years old.
Yeah, absolutely killed it yesterday, and he's obviously part of the broadcasting team over there, and you know Catherine Tappan on TV as well last night. Always good to see her, star of the greatest Toucher and Rich bit of all time, What's Tappanin'? Despite what many people think, I do still believe that is one of the greatest, not one of the worst, which it has been deemed before in the past. But Mike Milbury, also part of the broadcasting team, and he got in a little bit of trouble over this past weekend. He's not going to be on any of the broadcasts for the rest of the postseason here. And the reason why is because when they were talking about players being in the bubble, Mike Milbury said this.
Come here and play hockey. And if you think about it, it's a terrific environment with regards to if you enjoy playing and enjoy being with your teammates for long periods of time, it's a perfect place.
Not even any woman here to disrupt your concentration.
Oh, and also, too, no travel.
All right. So, the not any women here to take away their concentration. So, Mike Milbury is not going to be with the broadcast until the rest of the season. I don't know whether it was a suspension or anything like that, but he's not going to be there. He did make an apology, said, I sincerely apologize for making the comment. It was not my intention to disrespect anyone. I was trying to be irrelevant and took it a step too far. It was a regrettable mistake that I take seriously. Okay. This is something that, I mean... People talk a lot, and people say things that come out wrong or misinterpreted wrong. To me, you know what that sounded like? That sounded like every Super Bowl player, whenever they're on the dais at Media Day, when you ask about, hey, is it tough to concentrate on the week? He goes, you know what? You know, it is a distraction to have family members reaching out for tickets constantly, and so I try to get that all the way so I can just concentrate on football. I get all the family stuff out of the way because I don't want to have to worry about any of that because it's just a distraction. To me, that sounded like what he was trying to go for there, was that you've just got, you know, there's no distractions from the family. It wasn't a woman thing. It was more, we don't have to think about our wives. We don't have to think about anything else from the outside, and he ended up getting absolutely killed for that. Could he have said it better? Sure, fine. He could have said it better. Does his track record of saying fairly ridiculous things that, you know, might actually be legitimately offensive in the past, does it hurt him here? Of course it does. But in this case, man, I think that this is just, people are just waiting to pounce on somebody and say that they're wrong when I think that it was a point he was trying to make about family distraction that just came out wrong.
Well, why aren't women allowed in the bubble?
It's because they don't want anyone to get the players. Like scientifically, it's because they don't want more people in the bubble than absolutely have to be because they don't want a risk of infection.
Okay, but you could test, you know, certain people have them. So why aren't that? You're right. You know, the protocol there. But like you said, Rich, everyone's lost their minds. Okay, and common sense. We're talking about, especially in the NHL, some very young guys, right? 22, 23-year-old players. Are women a distraction for those guys? 1,000%. Yes.
I mean, if you take a look at, you know, there's all the rumors about what happened back in 2013 with Tyler Seguin.
Oh, my God.
Where they had to, right? You know, keep security outside of his hotel room when they were in Toronto because they were afraid he was back home and he was going to go out and hang out with it. I mean, that's just an anecdote to kind of put to your point.
Right. For the NFL players on the dais at Super Bowl week, those guys say things like that, but they're all so super careful and on guard because right. They've been instructed to do so. Mike Milbury is tasked with being a commentator.
Yep.
That's what he's supposed to. He's supposed to provide commentary. Now, whether some of it rubs you the wrong way or irks you or you don't agree with shouldn't be reason for kicking him off the broadcast. There's no women here to distract you. Now, that is a comment worthy of being kicked off the broadcast for the rest of the postseason. And look, I understand exactly what he's saying. Is it a quote-unquote old-school mentality? Okay, maybe. Mm. And that is code word sometimes for stuff that is politically incorrect or maybe even offensive. Who's offended by that?
Yeah,
who is offended at the comment that he said? If just the comment, it's like there's no women here to distract you.
Well, sometimes you just have to use. I know this is like something that people don't like to do nowadays, but when someone says something, sometimes it's not math. Sometimes it's, well, here's what he was trying to say, and it came out wrong. And I think in this case, that's specifically what he was doing. He's talking about distractions, family distractions that happens. Everyone says that. Like, athletes say that all the time. The amount of like times I've stood in front of these podiums over at Media Day. Whenever we go, you've been out to the Super Bowl thing where they roll them all out. Everyone talks about how, you know, I've got family calling me for tickets and it's driving me crazy and I can't wait to just think about football. Hardy, how many times do you hear that?
Yeah, but I mean, in this case, though, I think Milbury said exactly what he was trying to say because, you know, again, maybe it's an antiquated notion that family brings some stability. But to me, having my family around wouldn't be a distraction. You know, it'd be a distraction for me if I were single and had a bunch of single girls running around and I was, you know, trying to get laid every night. I mean, that becomes
Worked
a distraction. That becomes a distraction. Well, yeah, of course, for Yager. But he didn't have to try.
But just to add to that, weren't we just talking about the Gordon Hayward thing and people getting on his wife about, you know, having the kid and him possibly having to leave the bubble? Like, you know,
no one's getting on his wife.
No, but yeah, like on social media, people having fans or whatever. But my whole thing with Milbury is, he's okay. I think it's okay for him to make this comment. He's a former player, right? He's now a broadcaster. He's been a part of management in the NHL. Like, I think he's just speaking about what it's like in the NHL and okay. That the fact they're living this bubble life. I don't know. I just feel like that's what he gets paid to do, right?
All right. Ronick, I get. You can't joke about having a threesome with one of your coworkers because how do you do that again? Like,
yeah,
you can't do
it.
Like that I get. All right.
And he did it twice. I think the first time, right. Was it? You know what I mean?
Like, yeah. The Milbury ones, I mean, they went a little too nutty. I mean, in fairness, it doesn't sound like he's been suspended. It's just he said he's going to step back.
But, like, so this guy has to defend his career now and the kind of guy that he is. Like,
I mean, listen,
this is what Milbury's
not,
always
if you
been.
If this is the worst thing he's done, then you haven't paid attention to
the Sedin
Milbury's
twins
career.
Wasn't insulting. Years ago, like, come on.
I know. I mean, yeah, well, listen, it's a different time. All right. 617-779-0985. We have Bob Soucy. He is out at Patriots camp. Some interesting news over the weekend. It does indeed sound like Cam Newton is pulling away from everyone else, and more than likely he is the guy. We will talk to him about all that right after Joe Murray's headline.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Stop. This is the home of the Bruins, the Celtics, and these guys. Toucher and Rich on Boston's home for sports. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub. It's Toucher and Rich. We got Hardy and Joe Murray in studio. And Bob Soucy is the commanding voice of the New England Patriots on 98.5 the Sports Hub Radio Network. And as he did last week, he joins us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. And Bob, you got a sponsor. You're brought to us by Prop Swap. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning. Did you say commanding voice?
Yes, a very commanding voice when you're on the air with Mr. Scott Zolak.
Yeah, maybe commanding on the air with Zolak, but not in the car with our puppy. I just dropped my kids and the puppy off at my mother-in-law's, and needless to say, by the tone of my voice and exasperation, I've got a mess on my hands in the back seat. So, you know, carry on.
How old is your puppy?
He is about five and a half, 6 months. He does not like car rides whatsoever. Even short distances like 2 miles, which is what we just did.
Did the dog puke? Did the dog wet? Did he
was it
defecate?
A one or a two?
Yeah. What happened back there?
it's wet. Thankfully, he did not do the former, because that's usually what happens. But today, it's a different word that begins with a P, as I pop my P's. Yes, it's a little wet in the back seat here, even with the pads, but of course, you missed the pads.
Yeah, you better get some weather
checks. Oh, that sucks. Oh, so you bring pads in the car, he does it so much. So he pees in the car so much that you have to, that you get prepared for it.
Well, you know, the pads are actually, in this case, they're the puke pads rather than the pee pads. But today he cried. Today he threw us a curveball.
Wow.
He's a great dog.
Oh, what
dog,
a nightmare.
Awesome dog.
Oh, yeah.
Sure. Sounds like a great dog.
Joy of your life.
now, my dog's somewhat dangerous because, like, he insists on sitting on my lap when I drive. Oh. Like, I'll try to move him over.
Like Felger's dog, yeah?
Oh, really? Yeah. If you're passing on the street, yeah. It looks like my dog is driving the car if you were, like, passing me on the street, which I'm sure is probably not the safest thing in the world, but I would almost rather have that than have my dog puking all over the place, because that's a smell that doesn't go away easily. All right, Bob, this is, out of all the things that have been happening over the last couple of days at camp, we'll talk about the quarterback stuff in a minute, but the most concerning was that, I believe this was Mike Reese who noticed this. He said wide receiver N'Keal Harry was back at practice after missing the last three sessions, but he didn't finish. He said the heat seemed to get the best of him. When his time for 11-on-11 work near the end of practice, the offense was short one player, and everyone was looking for Harry, who had retreated behind a light pole and took a knee. There was a slight delay, and when it was clear Harry wouldn't be joining the drill as a member of the athletic training staff approached him, someone else had to step in. How concerning is all of this N'Keal Harry stuff to you?
Well, one of the things that I was most concerned about after that was the comments by Julian Edelman, because although he said you'll have to talk to coach specifically when he was asked about N'Keal Harry, he then delivered, I thought, an address about accountability and proving yourself to your teammates. And, you know, yesterday was his first day back, Harry's first day back, after three absences plus a scheduled day off. And, you know, you cut him some slack when it comes to, you know, how's his footwork out there? How does he look as a receiver? Was he a little bit, you know, slower than you'd like him to be? And for example, didn't get open against Justin Bethel on a deep route in Bethel. He's a cornerback who primarily is a special teamer, didn't make a couple of catches and balls that, whether they were in drills or coming back to a throw by Cam Newton under some duress. You know, it's his first day back in 4 days, 5 days. But in particular, the end of the practice sequence is concerning. On top of that, though, what Edelman had to say about accountability and, you know, the importance of being out there and proving yourself to your teammates and understanding it's a team game. It's about 11 guys who have to execute and be there for one another for 5, 6, 7 seconds at a time. And yeah, I thought, you know, read into it whatever you want. It certainly, you know, as I did, you know, the way I read into it, I thought it spoke volumes about, you know, what N'Keal and really everybody who is new to the professional football or has to learn how to be a professional in the NFL. This is your job, and you've got to be accountable to one another.
That's got to be infuriating. I mean, listen, as I said, you know, there's people get injured, people get hurt. But, I mean, this just sounds like a situation, especially when you got Edelman calling him out. And that's the right thing, and I'm glad he did that. And he seems to be that kind of guy who obviously, you know, wants to make sure that these guys feel accountable. But, I mean, you know, you got a guy, Julian Edelman, who's been hit a million times. And he's bouncing back, and he's getting out there. And I know that they're trying to restrict what he's doing. But, I mean, that's – at what point do you start looking at N'Keal Harry? Like, how far into the season do you have to, like, figure out, all right, maybe this guy might be a bust?
Well, let's hope that, you know, he bounces back today and has a really good day. And he's got his chance. There's not a lot of time before today and the start of the season. We're now 3 weeks away. 3 weeks from yesterday, the Patriots will play the Miami Dolphins in the regular season opener. And he's got to make up for a lot of lost time and much needed time that he really had to be on the field after missing so much of last year in the preseason and, of course, during the regular season. And he's a guy in particular I thought might really flourish with Cam Newton at quarterback. Zoe and I have talked about it a bit in our conversations in the afternoon. Newton's always thrived with those bigger receivers in Carolina, Kelvin Benjamin, Devin Funchess, and Harry's kind of cut from the same mold. And so you really want to see a chemistry develop there? Well, yesterday what we saw was chemistry between Newton and Edelman, and they continued to work on that rapport even while special teams work was going on. They had a really good series. They moved on to the side field when the special teams took over, and they were back at it once again, making sure they're on the same page. And for N'Keal Harry, just as he never really found his way, it seemed, into Tom Brady's circle of trust last year, he's got to do that with Cam Newton, and he's got to do it in a short period of time for this team.
So, Bob, first of all, it was a great show on Saturday, and I was watching you and Zoe and trying to glean as much as you could from that practice. Sounds like you got even more yesterday, but based on your experience and just watching in a limited capacity, how tough is it for you? How tough is it going to be for the team to make some really hard decisions here with this limited scope that they have in this training camp season? If it's tough for you and Zoe, and again, it didn't come across that way on the TV, but it's got to be tough for the coaches too. I wonder if they're going to be second guessing themselves right up until decision time on some of these guys.
Yeah, Bill Belichick has likened it to being in a college setting. He said it's the same thing college teams go through every year, college programs. You don't have exhibition games, maybe a scrimmage against one another. There's no preseason. And so you have to prepare, and then when it's time to start the year, you go with, you make your depth chart out, and then you go with that at the start of the season, and you have to be ready. And I think he's trying to keep things in perspective to allow him to control what he can control. It goes along with that cliche you hear all the time from the players. And I think it's also, it's Bill's way of saying, look, we don't have joint practices this year. We don't have preseason games. We're going to have to deal with it. And there's no sense in us worrying about it. But those of us in the media, we can think about it because it's definitely, to me, a significant absence from this year is the lack of joint practices. We have really high intensity competitive reps between the first team players for the Patriots and the first team players from the Tennessee Titans.
Right.
And you'd have Brady on the practice field maybe against the Saints, and he's trying to upstage Drew Brees. We saw fights in joint practices between Malcolm Butler and Alshon Jeffrey, Stephon Gilmore last year, and A.J. Brown. And that was the kind of intensity that you see. And it also gives the younger guys an opportunity to get reps in control situations where they can say, okay, it's third and goal with 30 seconds to go, and you test a young player to see how he responds going up against another team when he really doesn't know what they're going to do. They're throwing different things at one another as opposed to running against your teammates. So there's not that. There's not the preseason environment where guys are tested, the lights come on, there are officials on the field and so forth. And then beyond that, the absences of players. There have been so many guys out of camp, here for a day, gone the next, absent for a couple of days. You're not seeing some of these young receivers or even, a veteran like Demir Bird. You're not seeing them going up against Stephon Gilmore. So it's really tough to get a real barometer on, okay, so-and-so looks good running routes against air, looks like he's put on good weight, looks like he's faster, has better footwork, but how's he going to respond when he's going up against the Miami Dolphins if he makes the team?
Hey, Bob, who's the front runner right now to replace Patrick Chung, and would the team ever have interest in Earl Thomas?
No, I would not think so. You've got a free safety who's as dependable to position as anybody, and he's the quarterback of your defense, and that's Devin McCourty. Beyond that, the role that you're asking Patrick Chung to play, Thomas does a lot up near the line of scrimmage, to me more in a blitzing role. I think that you have several guys right now in that mix. You have veterans like Adrian Phillips and Terrence Brooks, and maybe one of those two guys sees the position at the start of the season. But I really am curious to see what Kyle Duggar becomes as their top pick from this past year's draft. And I think, there's been reports in the spring about Jawan Williams, the second-round pick from last year, a tall, lanky cornerback. Yeah, I thought he played aggressive at times well at Vanderbilt, and certainly we saw a little bit of that last year in the preseason, in particular the game against Tennessee, not afraid to stick his nose in there. He's the guy that, potentially, and again, he's worked on this in the spring. He talked to Mike Reese and Paul Perillo. Mike Reese reported it, and he talked to Paul Perillo from Patriots.com about it. So he's a guy that might find his way into that mix a little bit later on. But I think at the outset, it's probably Phillips and Brooks who have the beat on that spot at the moment.
All right, Bob, finally a player that I know you need to keep your eye on, all right? His name, Paul Quessenberry. Just signed by Bill Belichick in the most Bill Belichick move of all time. It's a guy who has not played football in 5 years. He played at Navy. He was a defensive end. And Belichick says, I like what I see. Not only am I going to sign you, but I'm changing your position to tight end. So he hasn't played in 5 years. He's a big dude who plays a position, but Belichick and Watson to play another. I'm thinking this guy's the next superstar.
You know, did you know the Navy's offense does not even feature a tight end? The midshipmen run a triple option offense, and Paul Questenberry was a defensive end. He was a guy that I called games for his sophomore season. He didn't play in the varsity as a freshman, and he would be probably, you know, the quintessential Navy football player. A little bit undersized compared to his Division I counterparts at his position, played with, you know, incredible effort on every play. And then when he graduated, he did have a workout with the Houston Texans. His brother at the time was playing for the Texans. He has two brothers who are in the league as offensive linemen. And Paul had that opportunity, but then he went to work for the country as a Marine Corps infantry officer. So we know he's tough. Coming out of the Navy program, as I said, you know, he didn't have a chance to play the tight end position, but he's been working out there and try to land a spot with an NFL team. And, you know, similar to a move that James Devlin made coming out of Brown as a defensive end, and it's not uncommon in the NFL. The Ravens have a guy named Patrick Ricard who's, you know, a fullback who also plays on defense at times. You see a lot of NFL fullbacks because of the lack of the position in the college game or the size of the players in the college game. A lot of NFL fullbacks are guys who were converted from the defensive side of the ball. So it's not unprecedented. I think the thing about Questenberry, though, that you allude to is the gap in time between his last football game and his, you know, reps yesterday in his first
Patriots. Oh, 5 years ain't nothing. 5 years ain't nothing, Bob Zosi. Come on.
But then, you know, then again, you know, I think it's a project. Maybe it's a guy they want to see if they can develop on the practice squad.
This is Bill Belichick slinging it. Like, this is him, like, I'm going to show the world just how smart I am. Like, I couldn't have written a more Bill Belichick signing if I tried. Navy hasn't played for 5 years. Changing his position. It's as Belichick as Belichick can be.
You know, Stephen Neal is probably the best example of a Belichickian a personnel decision that added to the reputation as a genius when Neal came out of college as a wrestler who didn't play college football and, of course, became a mainstay on a very good offensive line for a team that was Super Bowl champion. Questenberry is going to be interesting to see. You know, I'm not sure how long he's going to stick in camp. I hope he's there for the duration. I think it's more of a move to see what they can do to develop him. And, you know, Jakob Johnson right now, speaking of the fullback position, I think Jakob Johnson is having a good camp. And there's an interesting story. The only reason he was really with the Patriots last year is because the NFL granted a roster exemption. He's from Germany. And every team in the AFC East had an international player as part of the international development program. And so he didn't count against the Patriots roster. Winds up playing a little bit in the regular season after vastly improving, and I think he looks much, much better now. So he's the guy at that position. And Questenberry, hey, I've got an interest in it. You know, I'm a Navy guy. I called his games with Cardona. They were part of the class of 2015, and sorry, Army fans, but they went 4-0 against the Black Knights. So.
Well, Bob, listen, it takes a Navy man to be able to clean up all that dog puke in the back of your car. It's like a war zone. So good luck with all of that. Hopefully that does not leave a stink that doesn't leave you for the rest of the day like it does when my dog vomits. Listen, maybe everyone will just know you're there at camp. You'll walk right in and just get ready for the looks. That should be fun. Well, Bob, appreciate you coming on, man. Thanks for the updates. Well, I guess we'll talk to you again tomorrow and find out what happened today.
Sounds good, guys. More of a Navy fan, I guess. A Navy man, his dog would probably listen to his orders. Mind
you're probably so. Right. All right. Appreciate it, Bob.
Thanks.
Bob Zosi, the voice of the New England Patriots on the 98.5 of Sports of Patriots Radio Network. He joined us this morning for Patriots training camp, which is driven by the all-wheel drive Honda CR-V. Find it at your New England Honda dealership. Bob will also be on with Zoe and Beetle at 11:35 today. We've got Connor Ryan, right? From is he with the Athletic? I want to plug the right Boston Sports Show. That's right. He's with the Boston Sports Show. We like Connor Ryan. He covers the Bruins, and what a game that was last night. We will talk to him right after.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911, and we'll send the link straight to your phone.